I'm getting old. It is well this dreadful war ended when it did. I suppose there is no harm if I speak to you for a time, my dearest, if you wish it so."
A headache was starting behind Harry's eyes. Some part of Harry was trying to send a message about not having breathed in a while, but no one was listening. Imperfect. Professor Quirrell's Confundus charm had been imperfect. Professor Quirrell's image of Dumbledore's image of Ariana wanted to talk to Dumbledore, and maybe didn't want to wait, because Professor Quirrell knew on some level that there wasn't really an afterlife, and the previously implanted impulse to leave after getting the stone wasn't standing up to Riddle Ariana's arguments. And then Harry felt himself become very calm. He started breathing again. Either way, there wasn't much Harry could do about it. Professor Quirrell had stopped Harry from intervening. Well, Professor Quirrell was welcome to reap the consequences of that decision. If the consequences caught Harry as well, so be it. The man who thought he was Dumbledore was mostly nodding politely, sometimes replying to his dearest sister. Sometimes the man cast an uneasy look to one side, as if feeling a strong impulse to go, but suppressing that impulse with the great patience and politeness and concern for his sister that Professor Quirrell imagined Albus Dumbledore having. Harry saw it the instant the Confundus wore off, and the man's expression changed, becoming again the face of Professor Quirrell. And in the same instant, the mirror changed, no longer showing Harry the reflection of the room, showing instead the form of the real Albus Dumbledore, as though he were standing just behind the mirror and visible through it. The real Dumbledore's face was set and grim.
"Hello, Tom," said Albus Dumbledore.
Chapter 110. Reflections, Part 2. The grimness on Albus Dumbledore's face lasted only an instant before giving way to bewilderment.
"Goodness, what?"
And then there was a pause.
"Well," said Albus Dumbledore, "I do feel stupid." "I should hope so,"
Professor Quirrell said easily. If he had been at all shocked himself at being caught, it did not show. A casual wave of his hand changed his robes back to a professor's clothing. Dumbledore's grimness had returned and redoubled.
"There I am, searching so hard for Voldemort's shade, never noticing that the defense professor of Hogwarts is a sickly, half-dead victim possessed by a spirit far more powerful than himself. I would call it senility if so many others had not missed it as well."
"Quite," said Professor Quirrell. He lifted his eyebrows.
"Really? Am I that hard to recognize without the glowing red eyes?" "Oh, yes, indeed," Albus Dumbledore said in level tones. "Your acting was perfect. I confess myself utterly deceived. Goodness, Quirrell seemed... what is the term I'm looking for? Ah, yes, that is the word. He seemed sane."
Professor Quirrell chuckled. He looked for all the world as though the two of them were just having a casual conversation.
"I never was insane, you know. Lord Voldemort was just another game for me, the same as Professor Quirrell."
Albus Dumbledore did not look like he was enjoying a casual chat.
"I thought you might say that. I regret to inform you, Tom, that anyone who can bring himself to act the part of Voldemort is Voldemort."
"Ah," said Professor Quirrell, raising an admonishing finger.
"There is a loophole in that reasoning, old man. Anyone who acts the part of Voldemort must be what moralists call evil. On this we agree. But perhaps the real me is completely, utterly, irredeemably evil in an interestingly different fashion from what I was pretending with Voldemort."
"I find,"
Albus Dumbledore ground out,
"that I do not care."
"Then you must think yourself to be rid of me very soon," said Professor Quirrell. "How interesting. My immortal existence must depend on discovering what trap you have set, and finding a way to escape from it as soon as possible."
Professor Quirrell paused.
"But let us pointlessly delay to talk of other matters first. How did you come to be waiting inside the mirror? I thought you would be elsewhere."
"I am there,"
Albus Dumbledore said.
"And also inside the mirror, unfortunately for you. I have always been here all along."
"Ah," said Professor Quirrell and sighed. "I suppose my little distraction was for naught then."
And the rage of Albus Dumbledore was no longer leashed.
"Distraction!"
roared Dumbledore, his sapphire eyes tight with fury.
"You killed Master Flamel for a distraction!"
Professor Quirrell looked dismayed.
"I am wounded by the injustice of your accusation. I did not kill the one you know as Flamel. I simply commanded another to do so."
"How could you? Even you? How could you? He was the library of all our lore, secrets you have forever lost to wizardry."
There was an edge to Professor Quirrell's smile now.
"You know, I still do not comprehend how your twisted mind can consider it acceptable for Flamel to be immortal. But when I try for the same, it makes me a monster."
"Master Flamel never descended into immortality. He..."
Dumbledore choked.
"He only stayed awake past his evening for our sakes, through his long, long day."
"I don't know if you recall this,"
Professor Quirrell said, his voice airy,
"but do you recall that day in your office with Tom Riddle? The one where I begged you, where I went down on my knees and begged you to introduce me to Nicholas Flamel so that I could ask to become his apprentice, to someday make for myself the Philosopher's Stone. That was my last attempt to be a good person, if you are curious. You told me no. and gave me a lecture on how unvirtuous it was to be afraid of death. I went from your office in bitterness and fury. I reasoned that if I was to be called evil in any case, just for not wanting to die, then I might as well be evil. And 1 month later, I killed Abigail Myrtle to pursue immortality by other means. Even when I knew more of Flamel, I remained quite put out with your hypocrisy. And for that reason, I torment you and yours more than I otherwise would have done. I have often felt that you ought to know this, but we never had a chance to talk frankly.
I decline,
said Albus Dumbledore, whose gaze did not waver.
I do not accept the tiniest shred of responsibility for what you have become. That was all entirely you and your own decisions.
I am not surprised to hear you say that, said Professor Quirrell. Well, now I am curious as to what responsibilities you do accept. You have access to some unusual power of divination. That much I deduced long ago. You made too many nonsensical moves, and the paths by which they worked out in your favor were too ridiculous. So, tell me, were you forewarned of the result that night of All Hallows' Eve when I was vanquished for a time?
I knew,
said Albus Dumbledore, his voice low and cold.
For that, I accept responsibility, which is something you will never understand.
You arranged for Severus Snape to hear the prophecy that he brought to me.
I allowed it to happen,
said Albus Dumbledore.
And there I was, all excited at having finally gained my own foreknowledge.
Professor Quirrell shook his head as though in sadness.
So, the great hero Dumbledore sacrificed his unwitting pawns, Lily and James Potter, merely to banish me for a few years.
Albus Dumbledore's eyes were like stones.
James and Lily would have gone willingly to death if they had known.
And the little baby,
Professor Quirrell said.
Somehow, I doubt the Potters would have been so eager to leave him in the path of you-know-who.
You could scarcely see the flinch.
The boy who lived came out of it well enough. Tried to turn him into you, did you? Instead, you turned yourself into a corpse, and Harry Potter became the wizard you should have been.
Now there was something like the usual Dumbledore behind the half-moon glasses, a tiny twinkle in those eyes.
All of Tom Riddle's icy brilliance, tamed to the service of James and Lily's warmth and love. I wonder how you felt when you saw what Tom Riddle could have become if he had grown up in a loving family.
Professor Quirrell's lips quirked.
I was surprised, even shocked, by the abyssal depths of Mr. Potter's naivety. I suppose the humour of the situation would be lost on you.
It was then, finally, that Albus Dumbledore smiled.
How I laughed when I realized it, when I saw you had made a good Voldemort to oppose the evil one. Ha! Oh, I laughed! I never had the steel for my role, but Harry Potter shall be more than equal to it when he comes into his power.
Albus Dumbledore's smile disappeared.
Though, I suppose Harry shall have to find some other Dark Lord to vanquish for it, since you will not be there.
Ah, yes, that.
Professor Quirrell made to walk away from the mirror, and seemed to halt just before reaching the point where the mirror would no longer have reflected him, if it had been reflecting him.
Interesting.
Dumbledore's smile was colder now.
No, Tom, you are not going anywhere.
Professor Quirrell nodded.
What have you done, exactly?
You have refused death, said Dumbledore. And if I destroyed your body, your spirit would only wander back like a dumb animal that cannot understand it is being sent away. So, I am sending you outside time, to a frozen instant from which neither I nor any other can return you. Perhaps Harry Potter will be able to retrieve you some day, if prophecy speaks true. He may wish to discuss with you just who is at fault for the deaths of his parents. For you, it will only be an instant, if you ever return at all. Either way, Tom, I wish you the best of it.
Said Professor Quirrell. The defense professor had paced past where Harry stood, watching mute and with something like horror, only to halt again at the other edge of the mirror.
As I suspected, you are using Merlin's old method of sealing, what the tale of Tophilius Chang names as the process of the timeless. If legend speaks true, not even you can stop the process, now that it has been in motion this long.
Indeed,
said Albus Dumbledore, but his eyes were suddenly wary. And Harry, from where he stood, just before and to the right of the door, waiting in silence and controlled terror, could feel it in the air. He could feel the sense of a presence gathering within the mirror's field. Something more alien than magic. Everything about it incomprehensible except for the fact of its strangeness and the fact of its power. It had been slow, but now it was waxing faster, that presence.
But you could still reverse the effect, if Chang's account is true,
said Professor Quirrell.
Most powers of the mirror are double-sided, according to legend, so you could banish what is on the other side of the mirror instead. Send yourself, instead of me, into that frozen instant. If you wanted to, that is.
And why would I do that?
Albus Dumbledore's voice was tight.
"I suppose you're going to tell me that you have taken hostages. That was futile, Tom. You fool! You utter fool! You should have known that I would give you nothing for any hostages you had taken. You always were one step too slow," said Professor Quirrell. "Allow me to introduce you to my hostage."
Another presence invaded the air around Harry, a crawling sensation all over his flesh as another Tom Riddle's magic passed very close to his skin. The cloak of invisibility was torn away from him, and the shimmering black cloak flew away from him through the air. Professor Quirrell caught it and swiftly drew it over himself. In less than a second, he had pulled down the cloak's hood over his head and disappeared. Albus Dumbledore staggered, as though some essential support had been removed from him.
"Harry Potter," the headmaster breathed. "What are you doing here?"
Harry stared at the image of Albus Dumbledore, on whose face utter shock and utter dismay were warring. The guilt and the shame were too much. Too much hitting Harry all at once, and he could feel the incomprehensible presence around him rising to a peak. Harry knew without words that there was no time left, and that he was done.
"It's my fault,"
Harry said in a tiny voice from whatever part of him had taken over his throat in the final extremity.
"I was stupid. I've always been stupid. You mustn't rescue me. Goodbye.
"Why, look at that," sang out Professor Quirrell's voice from the empty air. "I don't seem to have a reflection anymore."
"No," said Albus Dumbledore. "No, no, no!"
Into the hand of Albus Dumbledore flew from his sleeve his long, dark grey wand, and in his other hand, as though from nowhere, appeared a short rod of dark stone. Albus Dumbledore threw these both violently aside, just as the building sense of power rose to an unbearable peak, and then disappeared. The mirror returned to showing the ordinary reflection of a gold-lit room of white stone, without any trace of where Albus Dumbledore had been. Chapter 111. Failure, Part 1. The Dark Lord was laughing. From the empty air came the voice of the defense professor, laughing wildly. So high and terrible his laughter. It was Voldemort's laughter now. The Dark Lord's laughter, beyond all hiding or restraint. Harry's mind was disarrayed. His eyes kept staring at where Albus Dumbledore had been. There was a horror in him that was too huge for understanding or reflection. His mind kept trying to fall back through time and undo reality, but that wasn't a sort of magic that existed, and reality stayed the same. He had lost. He had lost Dumbledore. There were no take-backs, and that meant he had lost the war. And the Dark Lord went on laughing.
"Ha ha 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 ha
Professor Dumbledore. Professor Dumbledore. Such a fitting end to our game. The wrong sacrifice, even at the finish. For the piece you gave up everything to save was already in my possession. The wrong trap, even from the beginning. For I could have abandoned this body at any time. You never did learn cunning, you poor fool.
You?
A voice was coming from Harry's throat.
You?
Why, yes, little child. You were always along on this adventure as my hostage. It was your whole purpose in being here. You are decades too young to play this game against the real Tom Riddle, child.
The Dark Lord drew back the hood of the cloak, his head becoming visible, and began to remove the rest of the cloak.
And now, boy, you have helped me, yes, indeed. And so it is time to resurrect your girl child friend to keep promise.
The Dark Lord's smile was cold, cold indeed.
I suppose you have doubts. Mark well, I could kill you this instant, for there is no longer a headmaster of Hogwarts to be informed of it. Doubt me all you wish, but remember that.
The hand was once more holding the gun.
Now, come along, foolish child.
And they left. They went back out through the door into the potions room, the Dark Lord banishing the returned purple fire with a stroke of his wand. They went through the chamber where the boggart had been, and the chamber of ruined chess statues, and through the burned door of the Chamber of Keys. The Dark Lord floated up through the trapdoor, and Harry struggled up afterward through the spiral staircases of leaves, the tendrils of Devil's Snare twitching and then moving back as though afraid. The boy who lived was trying hard not to burst into tears, and his dark side patterns weren't helping. Maybe because Voldemort had never known or dealt with guilt. They passed the huge, three-headed Inferi, and at a whispered word from the Dark Lord, it collapsed over the trapdoor and became a corpse again. They passed Severus Snape, standing guard, who told them both that he was guarding the door and that they must leave or he would deduct house points. The Dark Lord spoke the words.
Hiya Kudrumontauk.
Without pausing in his stride, accompanied by a jab of his wand, and Severus staggered before he lifelessly drew himself up beside the door once more.
What?
Harry said as he followed.
What did you...
Just fulfilling my obligation to my faithful servant. I shall not kill him, as I promised you.
The Dark Lord laughed again.
The hostages?
Harry said. It was hard to keep his voice steady.
The students? You said you'd stop whatever's going to kill them.
Yes,
stop worrying. We'll do on our way out.
Out?
We are leaving, child.
The Dark Lord was still smiling. The bad feeling this raised was lost in a sea of other bad feelings. The Dark Lord was now consulting what he had called the Hogwarts map. The handwritten lines upon it seemed to move as they walked. Some part of Harry's mind that had been considering what to do if they ran into auras on patrol, whom the Dark Lord could kill, or obliviate in an instant, gave up that hope as well. They went down the grand staircase to the second floor, encountering no one. The Dark Lord made a turn Harry did not know, and went down another stair flight. As they descended past one floor and another, the windows stopped and torches began. They were in the Slytherin dungeons now. Ahead, the form of a person in Hogwarts robes appeared. The Dark Lord kept walking toward that person. Harry followed. A sixth or seventh year Slytherin was waiting by a section of wall that was set with an artistic carving of Salazar Slytherin wielding his wand against what looked like a giant covered in icicles. The witch made no comment at seeing Professor Quirrell walking upright, or seeing Harry in his company, or seeing the gun in the defense professor's hand. If her eyes were blank, Harry couldn't tell the difference. The Dark Lord reached into his robes, took out a knut, and flipped it to her.
"Claudia Alicia Tabor, I command you thus. Take this knut into the spell circle I showed you beneath the Quidditch stands and put it in the center. Then obliviate yourself of the last 6 hours."
"Yes, Lord,"
the witch said, bowing to him, and went on her way.
"I thought,"
Harry said,
"I thought you needed the stone to..."
The Dark Lord was still smiling. He had never stopped smiling.
"I did not say that in Parseltongue, child. All I said in Parseltongue was that I had set events in motion to kill students, events that I would stop if I obtained the stone. The rest was in human speech. I would also have stopped the Bloodfort sacrifice if I had not obtained the stone, so long as I was not discovered and restrained. The students of Hogwarts are a valuable resource, whom I have already spent much time training."
Then the Dark Lord hissed to the wall,
"Open!"
Harry's eye saw the tiny snake that had been set in the upper left of the carving, even as the wall slowly swung backward, revealing the opening of a huge pipe. Moss grew on its sides, and a musty, dusty smell welled up from it. The interior was also covered with cobwebs in multiple sheets.
"Spiders," murmured the Dark Lord.
He sighed, and for that brief moment, he sounded once more like Professor Quirrell. The Dark Lord walked into the huge pipe, the cobwebs burning away before him. Harry, not seeing any other better options, followed. The pipe branched in a Y shape, then branched again. The Dark Lord went left, then right. The pipe came to a solid metal wall.
"Open!"
the Dark Lord hissed, and a crack appeared in the metal. It seemed to fold into itself. Beyond was the middle of a long stone tunnel.
"We shall be walking a while," said the Dark Lord. Did you have more questions to ask, little child?
I can't think of any right now.
Another cold laugh replied to this, and they walked into the tunnel, turning right. Harry didn't know, then or ever, how long he walked. The light of burning spiderwebs was too dim to read his mechanical watch, and Harry had not thought to look at the time before entering. It felt like they walked for miles, miles beneath the ground. Slowly, Harry's mind tried to recover itself a final time. Very possibly final, if he was right about the Dark Lord killing him after this. Though the Dark Lord had said that he would resurrect Hermione, which seemed pointless if that was true. Was that simply the Dark Lord following through on a promise he would not otherwise have been able to make in Baseltongue? Why had he not just shot Harry on the spot?
Seriously?
Some last functioning part of his brain said to all the other parts,
"This would be a good time to think of something. Something that the Dark Lord has not already thought of. Something we can do without our pouch, or our wand, or our time-turner. Something that Professor Quirrell has not imagined we can do. Think. Think. Pretty, please, think of something. Don't shut down now, even if you're scared. Even if we've never really, really faced death before in the sense of being about to die in the next hour. This is not the time to shut down."
Harry's mind stayed blank.
Suppose,
said that last remaining part,
suppose we try to condition on the fact that we win this, or at least get out of this alive. If somebody told you as a fact that you had survived, or even won, somehow made everything turn out okay, what would you think had happened? "Not a legitimate procedure," whispered Ravenclaw. "The universe doesn't work like that. We're just going to die." "Someone realizes we're missing," thought Hufflepuff, "and Mad-Eye Moody shows up with a squad of Aurors and rescues us. I think the time has come to admit we're not more competent than the standard authorities. The saving factor does have to be something we do somehow," said the last voice. "Otherwise, there's no point in our thinking about it." "Problem two," said Gryffindor. "Harry Potter isn't missing. He's right there at the Quidditch match where everyone can see him. Professor Quirrell thought of that too. It's part of why he sent that fake note. Problem three, I don't think Mad-Eye Moody and an Aura squad can beat the Dark Lord, and certainly not before he kills us. I'm not sure the entire DMLE can beat the Dark Lord if he's fighting seriously, and Dumbledore's gone. Problem four, the Quidditch match is not disrupted. That's probably the only reason why Professor Quirrell was willing to try something as complicated as bringing us along on this trip in the first place." "Thinking along different lines," ventured Slytherin, "maybe Professor Quirrell calls in someone else to memory charm us. Legitimacy, Imperius, Confundus, who knows what else? We're not a perfect Occlumens. Then the Dark Lord would have a smart, well, sort of smart, lieutenant that he could use. That could be another reason why Professor Quirrell was so willing to tell us secrets, if he knew that the memory would disappear. It's also a reason to leave the Hogwarts wards, so the Dark Lord can call Bellatrix to apparate in and do the work. This entire reasoning process is illegitimate, and I refuse to participate, said Ravenclaw. What lovely last words, said the last voice. Now, shut up and think.
Rough stone tunnel went by underfoot, Harry's shoes sometimes dipping into moisture or nearly slipping on a curved surface. The neurons in his brain, which kept on firing, imagined voices talking to each other, yelling at each other, even as the listener stayed numb with horror and shame. Gryffindor and Hufflepuff were conducting a debate about suicide by charging the Dark Lord's gun, or by swallowing the little jewel on Harry's steel ring. It seemed unclear whether the fate of the world was better or worse if the Dark Lord had Harry as a mind slave. If the Dark Lord was going to win anyway, it might be better if he won faster. And the last voice kept talking through it all, even in the depths of failure. That last voice remained.
What else did the Dark Lord always say in human speech and never in Parseltongue? Do we remember anything like that? Anything at all?
It was all too distant in time. Too distant in time, even though it had all happened this very day. The Dark Lord had told him in Parseltongue just now that it was time to revive Hermione. And then he'd said other things, all in English. Harry could hardly remember for all that there'd just been spoken. Before then, there'd been the circle of concealment, when Professor Quirrell had hissed that the barrier would explode if touched, and the defense professor had said in English for Harry not to take off his cloak or try crossing the circle. Said in English that the resonance might strike Professor Quirrell afterwards, but Harry would be dead. Said in English that if Harry touched the magic and Professor Quirrell didn't remember how to halt the resonance, it would kill them both.
"Suppose it doesn't kill us both," said the last voice. "On Halloween, in Godric's Hollow, the Dark Lord's body was burned, and we only ended up with a scar on our forehead. Suppose the resonance between us is deadlier to the Dark Lord than to us. What if this entire time we've been able to kill the Dark Lord at any time, just by dashing forward and touching our hands to any part of his exposed skin? And then it makes our scar bleed again, but that's all. The sense of, stop, don't do that, is inherited from the Dark Lord's worst memory of his mistake in Godric's Hollow. It may not actually apply to the boy who lived."
A small note of hope rose. Rose and was quashed.
"The Dark Lord can just throw away his wand,"
droned Ravenclaw.
"Professor Quirrell can turn into his Animagus form. Even if he dies, the Dark Lord will possess someone else and return, and then torture our parents to punish us."
"We might be able to get to our parents in time," said the last voice.
"We might be able to hide them. We might be able to get the Philosopher's Stone away from the Dark Lord if we killed his current body now, and that stone could provide the nucleus of a counter-army."
The Dark Lord was moving on through the stony corridor. His hand still held the gun. He was at least 4 meters away from Harry.
"If we dart forward, he'll sense us approaching through the resonance," said Hufflepuff. "He'll fly forward rapidly. He can do that. He has the broomstick enchantments that let him fly. He will fly forward,
turn around and fire the gun. He knows about the resonance. He's thought of this already. This is not something the Dark Lord has failed to consider. He will be ready for it and waiting. Continuing the same line of argument, said the last voice, suppose we can freely cast magic on Professor Quirrell, but he can't cast it on us. Why would that be true?
Demanded Ravenclaw.
In fact, we have evidence that it's false. In Azkaban, when Professor Quirrell's Avada Kedavra hit our Patronus charm, it felt like our head was splitting apart. Suppose that was all his magic going out of control. Suppose if we'd just cast, say, a Lumos targeting him. Nothing bad would have happened. But why,
said Ravenclaw,
why suppose that?
Because, thought Harry, it explains why Professor Quirrell didn't warn me not to cast any magic on him in Azkaban. Because Professor Quirrell never said in Parseltongue that I can remember that I'd hurt myself if I tried to cast magic on him. He could have given me that warning, but he didn't, even though he gave me a lot of other warnings. Absence of evidence is weak evidence of absence.
There was a pause while Harry's parts considered this.
We don't actually have our wand, said Ravenclaw. We might get it back at some point,
thought the last voice.
But even then,
Harry thought, and the grey hopelessness returned.
The resonance is something the Dark Lord knows about. He's already thought of everything I can do with that. He already has a response prepared. That was my mistake from the beginning. I didn't respect the Dark Lord's intelligence. I didn't think that maybe he knew everything I knew and could see everything I saw, and had already taken it into account. Then, said the last voice, conditional on our winning, we must have hit him with something he doesn't know about.
Dementors,
offered Gryffindor.
The Dark Lord knows we can destroy, deflect, and possibly control Dementors,
said Ravenclaw.
He doesn't know how, but he knows we have the capability. And where the heck would we get a Dementor anyway? Maybe,
ventured Hufflepuff,
the Dark Lord's whole Horcrux system would short out via the resonance if we grabbed him and held him, sacrificing our own life to destroy him forever.
Bullhockey,
said Ravenclaw.
But I guess it doesn't hurt to engage in some pleasant fantasy before we die, no matter how stupid. If Lord Voldemort had a strong enough fear of death,
Hufflepuff argued,
if we wanted strongly enough to just not need to think about death again, then the Horcrux system could have design flaws like that. It never occurred to Voldemort to test his Horcruxes on someone else. That could indicate he wasn't able to think about the subject clearly. So, his fear of death is his fatal weakness?
Said Ravenclaw.
Yeah, no. I'm thinking someone with over 100 Horcruxes might have a few fail-safe mechanisms in there.
And Harry's brain went on thinking. A genuine asymmetry in the magical resonance between them seemed improbable. There was no reason for the magical effect to work like that. But the magical backlash could hit the stronger wizard harder, the more powerful magic resonating more dangerously. That could explain the observed event in Godric's Hollow. Voldemort explodes, baby survives, and also explain the observed event in Azkaban. Voldemort, severely impaired by backlash of his strong magic, first year boy who lived, hit by lighter backlash of his weak magic. Or, if it was only the caster's magic that resonated, that could also explain both those two observations. That might even explain why Professor Quirrell had been in no rush to warn Harry against casting any magic on him. Though, there was another obvious reason why Professor Quirrell would avoid raising the subject of the resonance. It was a gigantic hint about the mystery of Godric's Hollow, if Harry had ever made the connection. The part that was numb with grief and guilt took this opportunity to observe, speaking of obliviousness, that after the events at Hogwarts had turned serious, they really, 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 really should have reconsidered the decision made on First Thursday, at the behest of Professor McGonagall, not to tell Dumbledore about the sense of doom that Harry got around Professor Quirrell. It was true that Harry hadn't been sure who to trust. There was a long stretch where it had seemed plausible that Dumbledore was the bad guy and Professor Quirrell the heroic opposition. But Dumbledore would have realized. Dumbledore would have realized instantly. The wise old wizard with the true phoenix on his shoulder would have known, and Harry hadn't trusted him. Harry hadn't told him all the relevant facts, and the reason for this had been sheer neglect to reconsider a cashed decision made 4 days into the start of the school year. It had been marked, "Something not to tell Dumbledore," and even after Azkaban, even after Hermione died, even after everything, Harry had simply forgot to promote the question to deliberation and reconsider the trade-off. Another wave of grief and shame washed over Harry, and for a time he walked on in the silence of the last voice, other voices being happy enough to fill the gap. After what was at least several miles and many grey thoughts, the stone tunnel ended. The Dark Lord climbed up stone steps, and Harry followed after. The two of them came into a dark, dank stone building. Dirty old stone doors swung open without being touched. Before them lay marble slabs rising up from bare ground. Upon them, names and dates. The tombstones were scattered in nothing like neat rows, and the rest of the graveyard ran wild. The moon above was over 3/4 full, already seeming bright with night not fully fallen. Harry had stopped walking upon seeing the graveyard. There was a blaring alarm in his brain saying to be anywhere other than here, but there weren't any options for accomplishing that. So that alarm cried unanswered, even as behind Harry the stone doors of the mausoleum swung shut again and sealed themselves. The Dark Lord came into the center of the scattered graveyard. He stopped walking and waved his wand above his head in a small circle. There was a rumbling sound, and smoothly from the ground rose an altar, at least 2 meters wide and of black stone carved with grey sigils. And then, surrounding the altar, groaned up 6 dark marble obelisks, regularly spaced, gleaming dark beneath the fading twilight sky. The unanswered alarm in Harry's brain grew louder. "This," said the Dark Lord in Professor Quirrell's cadences, "is a workspace I made for myself, convenient to either Hogwarts or Hogsmeade." The Dark Lord flourished a hand at the altar. "That is where Miss Granger shall revive,
and also where I shall be reborn into my true body. I shall remake myself first, of course. Magics to revive Gald child Isia with true body.
A strange, snakish laughter accompanied these words.
Rest assured that though some aspect of Girl-Child's resurrection shall be what others consider dark, Girl-Child will not be harmed or made ugly by it, shall still look like herself, mine shall be her own, nor shall I or mine harm her after.
Harry's tongue was dry, and his mind was having trouble functioning.
Please, Professor, would you say in parcel tongue, what is your real purpose in resurrecting Miss Granger?
To restore to you girl-child friend's counsel and restraint, to make sure she is part of the world for you to care about. That boy is truly the greater part of the reason I am doing this deed.
Again, snakish laughter accompanied these words, conveying sardonic awareness of some vast irony. A small spark of hope kindled inside Harry, alongside the much greater note of confusion, and the fear that a perfect Occlumens could indeed lie in Parseltongue. Harry didn't understand why the Dark Lord was doing this, if the next step was just to kill the boy who lived, or enslave him. Maybe he'd just never understood Professor Quirrell at all. Maybe, somehow, Harry's model of Tom Riddle was just that wrong. Maybe the boy who lived would be obliviated of the last day and dropped off somewhere with a confused Hermione Granger while Lord Voldemort went on to conquer the world. Hope flared up in Harry, but it was a confused hope that didn't make any sense. It didn't square with the Dark Lord who had mocked Dumbledore and laughed at his defeat. Harry couldn't come up with any consistent account of Professor Quirrell's motives that allowed for something like that.
"I do not know what is meant to happen next."
The Dark Lord had moved forward to the altar. He knelt there, and seemed to reach deep into the stone of the altar itself, drawing forth a vial of liquid that looked black in the fading twilight. When the Dark Lord spoke again, his voice was clipped and precise.
"Blood, blood, blood, so wisely hidden," said the Dark Lord.
And the obelisks surrounding the altar began to speak, voices like a chanting chorus coming from the motionless stones, cadences older than Latin.
"Avogadus divin, Avogadus divin, Avogadus divin, tu summa vobore."
The obelisk's chant echoed after the end of each line, as if they were speaking out of synchrony with each other. The blood was poured from the vial, and it seemed to catch and hang over the altar, slowly expanding through the air, taking on a shape.
"Avogadus divin, Avogadus divin, Avogadus divin, tu summa vobore."
A tall form rested upon the altar, and even in the dimming twilight it looked too pale. The defense professor reached his hand into his robe and drew forth a small, irregular chunk of red glass. He placed that upon the tall, pale body. The stone stayed there for a time. Minutes, at least. The irregular chunk of red glass did not glow, or flash, or give any other indication of power. Then the stone moved, just a little, turning slightly upon the body. The defense professor took back the stone into his robes and prodded the tall form that lay motionless upon the altar, touching the eyes with his fingers, poking the chest with his wand. He threw back his head then and laughed.
"Incredible," said the Dark Lord in the voice of the defense professor that Harry had known. "Fixed. It is fixed in form. A mere construct, sustained by magic, become the true substance at the stone's touch. And yet I sensed nothing. Nothing. I feared I had been deceived, that I had obtained a false stone, but the substance proves true to my every test."
The defense professor tucked the red glass back into his robes.
"That is eldritch, even by my standards, I admit."
Then the defense professor walked around the altar. 5 times he walked around it, chanting something too low for Harry to hear. The Dark Lord placed his wand in the hand of the figure lying on the altar. He placed his hands, both of them, over the body's forehead. The Dark Lord spoke.
"Faltor Pan."
Without any warning, there was a flash like lightning that lit up the entire graveyard, and Harry staggered back a step, his hands involuntarily going to his forehead. It felt as if he had been shot there, or a wasp stung him upon his scar. The defense professor collapsed, and the too tall figure sat up upon the altar. It swung around smoothly and stood tall upon the ground, at least a head higher than a normal man. The form's limbs were lean and pale, little muscled but giving an impression of terrible strength. Harry took another staggering step back, his hand still clasped to his scar. Though the distance between them was wide, Harry felt a sense of terrifying apprehension in the air, as though the sense of doom had always been out of focus, and had now clarified, concentrated into a physical pain in the scar on Harry's forehead. Was that what Voldemort was supposed to look like? The nose looked like... it looked like it had malfunctioned during the resurrection process. The too tall figure threw back his head and laughed, raising his hands and wand to look at them. The left hand opened wide, and it was like a pale half-spider with 4 overlong legs, fingers caressing the wand held in the other hand. Leaves stirred up from the graveyard, approaching to dance around the too tall figure, surrounding him and clothing him, reforming into a high-necked shirt and flowering robes. And Lord Voldemort was laughing. Exactly the mirthless laughter that Harry remembered coming from his own throat inside the Dementor's nightmare. Precise in tone and timbre. Red eyes gleamed beneath the fading twilight, their pupils slitted like a cat's. The form that Voldemort had abandoned raised itself, quivering from the ground, and in a voice that Harry could barely hear, Quirinus Quirrell gasped,
"Free! Oh, free!"
"Stupefy!"
said the high, cold voice of Voldemort. And Quirinus Quirrell was blasted down into the ground. Then, with a wave of Voldemort's other hand, Quirinus Quirrell was picked up and flung away from the altar. Voldemort walked away from the altar, then turned and looked at Harry. and the pain in Harry's scar flared at it.
"Frightened child!"
Voldemort hissed, like there was an undercurrent of parcel tongue, even to the Dark Lord's human speech.
"Good! Place the girl on the altar and break your transfiguration!"
"Is this really going to happen? Are we really going to do this?"
Harry swallowed, mastering his fear through that note of impossible hope amid the confusion, and walked over to the altar. Then Harry took off his left shoe and his left sock, and took off the toe ring that was Hermione Granger, the transfigured shape identical to the toe ring that had been given to Harry as an emergency portkey. There was a twinge of regret in Harry for not having the real portkey now, but only a twinge. An Inner Circle Death Eater would routinely put up boundaries against portkeys, if Severus had been right. Behind Harry, Voldemort laughed again in what sounded like surprised appreciation.
"I need my wand to finite her,"
Harry said aloud.
"You do not,"
high the voice, and cruel.
"You learned to sustain a transfiguration by touch alone, without further use of the wand. You can likewise break your own transfiguration wandlessly, by commanding your sustaining magic to drain away. Do so now."
Harry swallowed and touched the toe ring. He had to try 3 times and clear his mind before he could push his magic out of the toe ring, as before he had learned to make a tiny stream of magic flow in. The breaking of the spell went much more slowly that way than with a finite incantatum, almost like the sped-up reverse of watching something being transfigured. The toe ring distorted, flowing together, expanding. Colors changed. Textures changed. 2/3 of a dead girl lay strewn across the altar, on her side, with one arm falling off the altar's edge, the position in which the reversion had chanced to place her. No blood flowed now from the chewed stumps of her thighs. The dead girl wore Hermione Granger's face, but twisted and pale. It was as Harry had seen before in the hospital's back room. The image burned into his brain during 30 long minutes of transfiguration. The image he had reproduced during 4 even longer hours to transfigure the decoy. The dead girl was naked, for her clothes were not part of her and had not been transfigured. The sight brought back flashbacks of the hours spent in the infirmary room, of the nightmares afterward, all of which Harry suppressed.
"Go back," said Voldemort's high voice. "This is my work now."
Harry swallowed and retreated from the altar to the mouth of the long corridor where he had stood before.
"Her body is, should be, around 5 Celsius. I called her so. So there wouldn't be brain damage."
Harry's own voice was wavering in pitch.
"Is he really going to do this? Really?"
There had to be a catch, and Harry just couldn't see it. Voldemort had said that neither he nor any of his would harm Hermione, that her body and mind would be her own. Why? Voldemort walked forth to the altar once more, orienting the body before him with a wave of his hand to lie straight across the altar. The Dark Lord spoke with high monotone precision.
flesh, 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 so wisely hidden.
The obelisks began chanting once more.
Abogatus dipi, Abogatus dipi, Abogatus dipi, tu soma muevoe.
New flesh flowed out of the stumps of the girl's thighs, creeping forward like an ooze and solidifying. The obelisks ceased chanting. A complete form lay naked upon the altar. It didn't look like Hermione. A Hermione Granger should be standing up and talking. She should have her Hogwarts uniform. Voldemort raised a hand, then hissed, as though in annoyance. With a violent gesture, the robes around Quirinus Quirrell's sleeping form were torn in half, his purple and green tie shredded, and his suit jacket drawn from him to where Voldemort stood. Some part of Harry flinched, as if seeing the Dark Lord Voldemort attacking Professor Quirrell. Voldemort plunged his hand deliberately into the suit jacket, which jerked as though something were being broken. Then Voldemort shook out the suit jacket onto the ground beside him, emptying out the contents. Harry's pouch fell from it, and his time-turner, and a broomstick, and Voldemort's gun, and the cloak, and a number of amulets and rings and stranger devices that Harry did not recognize. And, finally, a chunk of red glass, which was laid upon Hermione Granger's form and allowed to stay there for a time. Minutes passed. The Dark Lord donned an amulet from the heap of things beside the altar. Also from the heap, Voldemort took four short wooden rods with straps upon them and reached beneath his robes to attach them. It looked like they went on his upper arms and upper thighs. The Dark Lord rose into the air, moved left, right, up and down, seeming to wobble slightly at first, then his flight stabilized. The chunk of red glass turned slightly. The Dark Lord Voldemort floated to the ground and prodded Hermione Granger's body with his wand.
"There is an obstacle," hissed Voldemort. In Harry's mind, the expectation of betrayal or other failure had already been so strong that the confirmation came only as a dull shock, not a sharp one.
"What obstacle?" "Girl's body is restored. Substance is repaired, but not magic or life. This is body of dead muggle."
Voldemort turned from the altar, began to pace.
"The full ritual would solve this, but that would require time. Time and the blood of Granger's enemy. And I do not think Draco Malfoy still qualifies. Nor can I take my own blood unwillingly." "Foolish."
Voldemort's voice was a low hiss.
"Foolish. I should have foreseen this and prepared. Your brain might awaken with an electrical shock. I know that much of muggle medicine. But would her magic return to her? That I do not know. And I suspect if she awakens as a muggle, she will be a muggle forever. Still, I think of nothing better."
The Dark Lord raised his wand.
"Wait!"
Harry blurted, feeling hope return.
"She needs a spark of life and magic. Just a spark to get her started."
Voldemort turned and looked at him. The snake-like face showed some slight degree of surprise.
"Think I have something that might work,"
Harry hissed.
"Needs wand. Have no intentions to use it against you."
Harry said nothing about expecting his intentions wouldn't change. He'd simply blurted out the idea fast enough that he hadn't formed any specific intentions yet.
"This," Voldemort hissed, "I desire to see."
The Dark Lord reached into the heap of things by the altar and picked up the wrapped form of Harry's wand. It was thrown, gliding through the air and then dropping at Harry's feet. And then the Dark Lord floated back, the heap of things moving smoothly backwards with him. Harry unwrapped his wand and moved forward.
"We have our wand back. That's step one,"
said the last voice, the voice of hope. No part of Harry had any idea what step two might be, but it was still step one accomplished. And Harry stood before the reformed body of Hermione Granger, who was still naked and dead on a twilight-lit stone altar.
"Lord Voldemort," Harry said, "I beg you, please give her some clothes. It might help me do this."
"Granted," hissed Voldemort.
The pain in Harry's scar flared as the naked girl's body lifted into the air, then flared again as dead leaves danced around her and she was clothed in the seeming of a Hogwarts uniform, though the trim was red instead of blue. Hermione Granger's hands folded over her chest. Her legs straightened and her body drifted back down. Harry looked at her, focused on her now that she looked human again.
"She looks like she's sleeping, not dead."
It took a conscious effort to look for breathing, fail to see it, and make the deduction. So far as naked perception was concerned, Hermione might as well be alive right now. That Hermione Granger would not approve of this situation, taken as a whole, seemed beyond question. But it didn't mean that she would rather stay dead than be alive, other things being equal, though they might not be.
"Because you wish to live. Because my best guess is that you would wish to live."
Harry reached out his shaking hand and touched Hermione's forehead. It was warm now, not the chill of 5 degrees Celsius. Either Voldemort had increased her body temperature to normal, or the magic of the ritual had done it automatically. Which meant that Hermione's brain was currently warm and without oxygen, come to think. That did it. The sense of urgency rising in him. Harry's feet assumed the stance. His wand swung up to point at Hermione Granger's dead body. The only thing wrong with Hermione's body was that it was dead. Everything else about the body was right. Only one thing needed to change.
"You don't belong here, Death."
"Expecto!"
Harry shouted, feeling the magic and the life rise up into the Patronus charm that was fueled by both.
"Patronum!"
The girl in the Hogwarts uniform was surrounded by a blazing aura of silver fire as the Patronus was born inside her. Harry staggered as he felt a dip, a bite. Intuition, or Tom Riddle's memory, told Harry that the life and magic that had just flowed into Hermione would never return to him. Either one. It hadn't been all his life or all his magic, not by a long shot. There hadn't been time to expend that much. But whatever he had just expended was gone forever. And Hermione Granger was breathing, just like she was sleeping. Rhythmic inhalations and exhalations. The twilight sky had dimmed further, and Harry could not see if color was returning to her. But it should have been. It certainly should have been. She looked to be sleeping peacefully, and it wasn't because being dead looked like sleeping. It was because she was asleep, and her body was fine, and nothing was hurting her while she slept. Some part of Harry that had somehow managed not to speak up earlier quietly pointed out that they were still in a graveyard. The recently victorious Lord Voldemort was still in control of the situation, and that his guess about Hermione wanting to be alive was just a guess. Harry was still smiling as he lowered his wand. The celebratory fireworks going off inside his mind were restrained. Harry wasn't screaming and running around in little circles like Professor Flitwick, but that, Harry said aloud inside his mind,
that is what I call step two.
Interesting, said the cold, high voice. Your Patronus draws upon your life as well as your magic. I guessed that much, for it was too powerful for a first year to fuel with magic alone. And yet there must be more to the puzzle, since not just any life-fueled spell would have done. Was your happy thought the image of her returning to life? Was that all it took?
Lord Voldemort was again toying with his wand, a dark interest in those red-slitted eyes.
I suspect I will feel quite stupid when I finally comprehend that spell. Someday, in my eternity. Now step away from the girl. There is more work I intend to do, to give her best chance of continued life.
Harry stepped back reluctantly, the sense of tension starting to return to him. He almost tripped over one haphazard grave marker as the Dark Lord continued to walk forward. Standing before the altar, the Dark Lord laid one finger upon Hermione Granger's forehead. Then the Dark Lord tapped his finger upon Hermione Granger's forehead and said in a voice so low Harry almost didn't hear,
"Requiescus."
Voldemort waved his hand at an obelisk which began to rotate, turning itself to lay flat upon the ground, pointing outward.
"Fascinating indeed,"
Voldemort hissed.
"She is alive, and magical, and not another Tom Riddle, as I feared you might have made her."
He'd put his wand away into the back pelt of his trousers. He did not want to remind Voldemort that he still had the wand on him.
What are you doing to her now?
Another obelisk turned, lay flat upon the ground.
There is old, lost ritual to sacrifice magical creature. Transfer magical nature to subject. Limitations are great. Transfer is temporary. Only few hours. subject sometimes dies when transfer wears off, but stone will make permanent.
Four obelisks lay flat upon the ground, evenly spaced. The other two obelisks had been floated away. Voldemort began to reach into his own mouth, checked himself, hissed with annoyance again. He gestured at the sleeping mouth of Quirinus Quirrell, and from Quirrell's mouth floated up two teeth, almost invisible in the falling night. One of these went to the pile of items, the other floated to before the altar. Moments later, Harry cried out and took a step back. Huge and misshapen, lumpy skin, legs thick as tree trunks, a small head that looked like a coconut perched upon a boulder. A mountain troll stood within the circle of obelisks, motionless as though asleep while standing.
"What are you doing?"
Voldemort's mouth was stretched in a wide smile. It looked horrible on him, like his face had too many teeth.
"Shall sacrifice my fallback weapon, and girl child shall gain troll's power of regeneration. Transfiguration sickness is nothing before that, if perchance it was not fixed by previous ritual, and no knife shall slay girl child, nor cutting curse, nor sickness taker."
"Why? Why are you doing this?"
Harry's voice shook.
"Have not the tiniest intention of letting girl child die again, after going to such lengths to resurrect her."
Harry swallowed.
"I'm very confused."
Was Voldemort practicing being nice? This hypothesis did not seem like a sufficient explanation.
"Stay well back," Voldemort said coldly. "This ritual is darker than the last."
The Dark Lord began a new chant, softer syllables that seemed to seed through the air like living things, and Harry, feeling a new surge of apprehension, stepped backwards. Then Harry cried aloud as pain flared again within his scar. The mountain troll crumbled in on itself, becoming ashes hanging in the air, then dust, and then the dust seemed to blow away without going anywhere. It was gone. Hermione Granger slept on peacefully, whatever spell of repose Voldemort had cast on her being sufficient to the task. Harry said in a small voice.
"Did it work?"
"Defendo!"
Harry stepped forward with a choked yell and then halted, both as the stupidity of his motion caught up with him and as the sudden cut that the severing charm had opened on Hermione's leg closed almost as quickly as it had been made. In seconds, there was only a light stain of blood on the surrounding flesh. The stone was laid again on Hermione, and after a time, it turned. Voldemort laughed once more as he passed his hands over her.
"Marvelous!"
Then, another tiny tooth was floating within the circle of obelisks, and an instant later, a unicorn stood where the troll had stood before, eyes dull and head lowered.
"What?"
Harry said.
"Why a unicorn?"
power of unicorns, blood to preserve life, makes excellent combination with trolls' healing. Only fiendfire and killing curse shall girl child fear from this day. Besides, had spare unicorn left over, might as well use. Unicorn's blood has side effects. That is only when power of unicorn's blood is stolen by another. This spell will make power of unicorn belong inside girl child, as if she was always born that way.
The grim chant and its seething words began again. Harry watched, not understanding in the slightest.
Forget understanding. What am I seeing? I'm seeing the Dark Lord Voldemort going to enormous lengths to resurrect Hermione Granger and keep her alive. It's like he thinks that his own life depends on Hermione Granger being alive somehow.
The confused parts of Harry looked around for a procedure to follow.
Make a prediction based on your best current hypothesis,
was the first thought that came to mind, but it didn't seem to lead anywhere. The plot of the story wasn't going how it ought to after the villain had won.